Fred Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
Hello everyone, welcome to this session. I'm very excited always to be talking about this subject. So we're going to be talking about virtual worlds, social VR and the metaverse. And we're going to be looking at the opportunities for creators and producers in this very fastly evolving area. I'm Liz Rosenthal. I'm the co-curator of Venice VR Expanded at the Venice International Film Festival. And I'm super excited to be joined by three experts in the field who are all obviously remote, and we're going to be seeing them online. So it would be great if the team could pull up speakers on the gallery. I'm going to introduce them one by one. So Kira Benzing first, welcome back to Venice virtually. So Kira is creative director of Double Eye Studios. She won our award last year for best VR user experience with this fantastic project, Finding Pandora X, which is an immersive theatre experience that's set in a virtual world. So it's staged on the platform VR Chat. Second, we have Theo Priestley. I don't know if they're still on. We've had a bit of a technical problem here. Nope, everyone's back. Fantastic. Hey, sorry, Theo. So Kira's based out of outside of New York City, and Theo is based in Scotland. So Theo is a futurist, an author, and a metaverse consultant. And he's the founder of an agency called Metapunk, and he consults on business, technology, and cultural impacts that arise out of the metaverse. So he helps brands, organizations, and investors to navigate this revolution. And third up is Rick Treewick. So Rick's based out of South Africa. He's the co-founder of Eden, and he also set up this wonderful community called the Metaverse Community that's on VR Chat. So he's working on business, mainstream, and art applications. His community, the Metaverse Community, who I've been hanging out with this year on Thursday nights in VR Chat, they're world-building artists, coders, and producers, and they've got several projects in Venice VR expanded in our selection. Each of the panelists is going to give a 10-minute presentation about their exploration and work in the metaverse. And then we're going to have a discussion, and hopefully we'll have some time for some audience questions. And just to tell the panelists, we've actually got quite a full room here, which is totally amazing. And we've also got an online audience, so hello to the online audience as well. At last, since our COVID confinement, we've witnessed a huge growth in the use of social VR platforms to work, to meet, to play, to collaborate, and to experience new forms of art and entertainment. So we're going to look at the present virtual world ecosystem and predict where it's heading. And also the panelists are going to discuss how they and other creators are pushing the boundaries to create all kinds of artistic experiences for multi-person platforms. And we're going to talk about festivals, live performances, games, and new artistic forms, things like avatar creation and the whole new ecosystem that's going to come for revenue generation. So at last year's edition of Venice Film Festival, Michelle Rayac, who co-curates Venice with me, we were both forced to rethink how we did our festival. So we saw the huge possibility of using social VR platforms to hold a virtual edition of the festival. And after analysing the huge variety of platforms out there, we decided to use VR Chat, where we created a fantastical version of our in-real-life venue, the Lazzaretto Vecchio in Venice, which we'd held Venice VR in for the previous three editions. So this year we've gone even further. As well as creating a much more substantial virtual world hub in VR Chat, we've got a huge program of live performances, club nights, world hops, and meet the creator sessions in our world every day. And also, we've gone even a step further because we've found that where we're seeing the most exceptional creativity is on social platforms, and in particularly on VR Chat. So we decided to to create a completely new section for Venice VR Expanded called the VR Chat World Gallery that features 34 public worlds that we've curated amongst the thousands that have been built and created on the platform. So I wanted to start by showing you a video taster that's a tour by Michelle and me of our virtual world. So can we play the video?
Hello everyone, welcome to Venice VR Expanded 2021. I'm Liz Rosenthal, I'm the co-curator of Venice VR.
And I'm Michel Rayac, I'm the co-curator with Liz of Venice VR Expanded 2021. Welcome to our world.
So Venice VR is part of the Venice International Film Festival, and this is our virtual place that we will meet everyone. You can experience projects, we have parties and events, and we're going to take you on a tour around the world today.
We have split the world in three different areas. Behind us is what we call the gathering area with two bars, sitting space, private spaces, and a red carpet that will lead you directly all the way to the end to the photo call screen on the sea where you can have pictures made with you as a souvenir. On this side, we have our amphitheater with a screen where we will have screenings all day, all night, all the time, and events on the stage where we will have panels, where we'll have meet the creators, and those events will be in private instances of the same world where you will join by joining the host that you've been given the name of.
Hello, we're in our exhibition hall. Venice VR selects 37 projects in official selection. And this hall is a place where you can see previews of all 37 projects.
Each world is like, the preview world is like a teaser, is like a trailer, is an introduction. It's open to anyone. You just go through the portal into the poster, and there you are. And in front of us, we have what we call the city, which is a replica, if you will, of Venice, where you will be able to roam around the streets, take a gondola on the canals, and you will find access to our VR Chat World Gallery selection. And at the foot of the tower in front of us, you have the entrance point to our avatar gallery, where you can choose any avatar you want exhibited, and you can wear it while you're staying with us in our world.
So you can see we have some of the best avatar designers in the world, and I've changed into my evening wear. And also remember that we have some incredible events happening during Venice VR Expanded. As well as the opening and closing night parties, we have club nights, and we have live performances, we even have a guided meditation. But for all of those things, you're going to have to get an accreditation to join us. And if you'd like to do that, please join the Biennale site, and you'll see how to do that in the Venice VR Expanded 2021 section. Even if you don't want to get an accreditation, we'd be delighted to see you here in Venice VR Expanded. Look forward to you joining us.
Great. So that's the... Thank you. I wasn't expecting that. But please, I hope, well, obviously we've got in real life Venice, that Michelle, who's sitting in the front of the audience, Michelle and I are diving between the in real life Venice Festival, because we have a VR gallery in real life and the virtual world. And it's been a lot of fun. But we've got to sort of clone ourselves, I think, just to take part in everything. So now we're going to move over to Theo. So Theo is going to give us a very rapid overview of the huge social VR ecosystem. So I'm going to hand it over to you, Theo.
Thank you, Liz. So hopefully everybody can see this. Here we go. And yes, it is going to be a very rapid whirlwind tour, like I say, of social VR and the metaverse. So I just wanted to start off with the typical sort of definitions of what a social VR and a metaverse are. And social VRs are platforms that connect VR worlds and VR systems. And you can either be plugged in through a VR headset, or you can experience it over a web interface. And you can share these virtual experiences in real time with other people, either co-located or geographically separate. There's a huge explosion in this, and certainly in the platforms that are being built today. Back in 2019, there were 16 specific social VR platforms, each with their own kind of requirements and their access, their accessibilities, and also integration points. So you could build your own avatar, or they had bespoke avatar systems. They had typical creator type tools, or you had to use another third party tool. There was shopping integration as well, so you could essentially build marketplaces and actually sell your wares as well. And there's also a lot of differences back in 2019, but also where we are today in terms of the number of concurrent users that you can host on a platform. And these are kind of some of the requirements which I think are going to separate a lot of the VR, the social VR platforms, and also the metaverse platforms as well, in terms of which ones are going to be really successful going forward. Unbelievably, there are about 180 different types of kind of game engine and certainly creator engine tools out there that can actually build virtual worlds. The most popular ones are obviously Unreal and Unity, which is what VRChat is built on. And there's a lot of flux in terms of which one is actually going to be the kind of platform to build these social VR and these metaverse experiences on. Unreal, as you know, has been spending a lot of money and actually taking in a lot of money in terms of investment to build out their strategy. And it's interesting to watch how every time that they do an event, say the first one was with Travis Scott, the last one was with Ariana Grande. While these are quite spectacular in terms of marketing and PR stunts, what they're really doing is actually testing the extremes of each of their platform to see how many concurrent users they can have on board, what these people can do in terms of interaction. And it's going to be interesting to see, I mean, in these charts here, we see Unity exploding because it is actually a really, really good flexible tool to build social VR experiences with. But what I really want to see over the next 5 years is actually to see, revisit this chart and see where Unreal comes from and whether it's actually going to start stealing the crown, because it is, you know, they are positioning themselves more as a metaverse tool and a metaverse building tool. For social VR requirements, like I said, it can support VR headsets, or it can or support accessibility in terms of a Web3 interface. And I think this is going to be quite an interesting separation for platforms going forward, is the accessibility angle. So how many users will be wearing headsets for the full immersion, and how many are you actually going to allow to come in just using a web browser? And I think for any social VR and metaverse project, this will be obviously one of the key success factors in a way, certainly for mass adoption. Users are represented by avatars. I think that's a really interesting point as well, is that for social VR and especially for the metaverse, you are free to express yourself in whatever way you want. And I think another success criteria for these platforms is the avatar creation tools, allowing you to not only just express yourself as a person wearing whatever kind of outfit you want, but you don't actually have to be a human. You could be a plant if you wanted. You could be a table. You know, if that's how you feel on that particular day, then you can, you know, take a walk through the metaverse as a three-legged table if that's your thing. But these social, you know, these VR platforms and these metaverse platforms should allow you to express yourself in any way you want. Another one is platforms are open-ended. So there's a large push at the moment for standards and interoperability to be able to jump into one world and another without having to sign up for different terms and conditions, different usernames, different passwords. You know, it should literally be like walking through your own room, your own house. I just walk through a door and I'm in somewhere else. And we, as platform builders and as strategists, should actually start thinking about this up front. What is the user experience going to be up front to allow them to seamlessly walk from one thing to another? And I see social VR as a step towards building that kind of metaverse, but it's not just around the technical platforms and again, like I say, social, your personal expressions. It's all the interaction that comes with it, how we are going to consume different types of media. So, you know, we have a 3D world, a 3D space I don't need to sit in a room to watch a flat screen movie anymore. I could literally walk into a 3D environment and potentially live that movie, actually be part of the action scenes. And these are some of the things that I'm really going to be excited about when Hollywood gets a grip on what the metaverse and what VR virtual worlds can actually bring to the table. And then we kind of sort of move into what the metaverse is. And, you know, it's quite interesting speaking to a lot of people in the industry about if I asked 100 people what the metaverse definition is, I would get 100 different answers. Everyone has their own slant, and it's probably the same with social VR as well. But one of the most common ones is obviously on Wikipedia, which is it's a collection or a collective virtual shared experience. And it's that kind of bridge between the physical reality and the virtual space. The other interesting point for the metaverse is that it's not all just a consumer playground either. There are a lot of big businesses looking at it from a digital twin, Internet of Things integration. So people can actually build virtual environments and then simulate what's going to happen with machinery, with, you know, you could build a virtual twin of a city, for example, and then simulate in that environment what would happen if I changed the road structure? What would happen if an accident or an event, catastrophic event happened? How could we simulate how we could plan for disasters? Those kind of things. So the metaverse represents quite a larger opportunity, and social VR is an important and integral part of that. It's not a separate, I don't see them as separate. I think I see them as an integral part, and social VR feeds into the whole metaverse strategy in a way. And the metaverse landscape is obviously as big, well, is a lot bigger than social VR, because social VR is taking into account just one small aspect. Metaverse has exploded in the last few years, and certainly now that you know, Facebook is pumping a lot of PR and marketing into it, everybody is kind of sort of paying more attention to what are the types of components that are needed to build it. You know, like I said, we have avatar and identity, so that's going to be a really important part. You have the social aspect and the communication aspect. How does that feed into it? The economic side is really interesting, because obviously we want to be able to create, well, we want creators to be able to make money from the metaverse and social VR. So if I can create digital goods and services, I want to be able to monetize that and actually extract that value back into the real world. And we've seen these kind of sort of things happening with cryptocurrency games, where especially under the pandemic in the Philippines, I think it was called Axie Infinity, allowed while everyone was in lockdown and couldn't actually physically go out to earn money, they farmed these little creatures, these little critters on a mobile game, and earned cryptocurrency that way to be able to afford food, to be able to afford rent, that kind of thing. So I see, you know, the payments layer and the economic infrastructure being really important going forward. And of course, the amount of money in terms of the economic value for metaverse and social VR is huge. I mean, you know, it's multi-billion dollar industries that we're talking about here. And of course, we can't ignore the consumer entertainment market, because that is absolutely huge. And people will want to socialize in the metaverse and in social VR. They want to hold birthday parties. They want to attend concerts, which we've seen. You know, Travis, for example, generated 12.3 million concurrent attendees and 48.5 million views across social media. These are huge opportunities that people could, you know, consumers and brands and even entertainment companies can take advantage of. It doesn't have to be using Fortnite. You could develop your own. But fashion shows as well. We're seeing a lot of interest from luxury brands coming in to basically look at how can they enter social VR and the metaverse worlds to showcase their goods and services. Virtual catwalks, for example, allows people who would traditionally not be able to take part in these things to be a part of the experience. And of course, crypto and NFT economics. You know, we've seen the explosion in NFTs right now. You know, there's a lot of interest from an artist's point of view in being able to create art and then sell it on. And then you've got a secondary market, which is, you know, and the artist is continually generating revenue and income from that. And I think it's really important to recognize that, one, I don't think it's going to be a flash in the pan. We might see some fluctuations in terms of what people want to buy into. the key part of an NFT is the utility. So as soon as we move away from just purely thinking about artists and pictures and things like that, and into how can this, what I buy, have utility in the world, virtual world that I'm inhabiting, that's when we see real value coming from NFTs. And of course, everything is wrapped around what I see as a generational movement or a culture. We have, you know, Gen X, we've had Generation Alpha. And I do believe coming from like 2025, I think it is, to 2040 is Generation M. People who will be born and will live, breathe everything to do with social VR and the metaverse. This will be their native home rather than, you know, the physical world. They will want to interact with it. They will want to, you know, spend their money and make money in it. And they'll probably build a career out of it. And these are the things that we have to start thinking as creators ourselves and as strategists, is the generation that's going to come after Alpha are going to be the ones who will natively experience this. Much like the people who grew up with the mobile phone and we had to adapt as older generations to it, that, you know, people are born and are immediately swiping because they're watching their parents swipe on a mobile phone, and we don't use typewriter, you know, we don't use a keyboard or anything else like that. Generation M is that generation who will be born into social VR and the metaverse. And as opportunities for everybody, I see, you know, for brands, for people, new movies and esports experiences. Again, esports, you don't actually have to physically watch. You could actually be part of the whole experience in the game itself. Adaptive advertising, you're not bound to 2D experiences anymore. You can literally build a world, a virtual experience for people to live and breathe the brand. And this is something that I think brands are going to have to wrap their heads around, in a sense. NFT marketplaces, like I said, there's that whole sort of payment infrastructure and economy side that's going to drive it. Creator tools as well. I see a lot more investment in actual startups building the tools to let people go out and explore and create for themselves. You know, we don't all have to sort of stick to Unity and Unreal, for example. There should be a whole ecosystem of smaller tools that are easy to pick up for consumers and brands just to experiment. Digital land ownership is another thing as well. You know, I build a virtual world and someone might actually want to build or buy physical, well, virtual real estate, and that's what they own. So ownership takes a completely different aspect there. Microtransactions, 3D content development, digital experiences, again, retail. We're going to see V-commerce, not just e-commerce, and everything will happen in there. So if I want to build a retail experience, I don't expect to enjoy the experience or the engagement. And then if I want to buy something as part of that, I get pulled out into the 2D world again. Everything must happen within that 3D environment in that space. I think that's 10 minutes. I'm not sure. but I've tried to encapsulate that in as rapidly as possible. It's a huge space. It's really exciting. I think the next 5 years is going to be an absolute exponential growth in terms of the opportunities. And it's to me, it's there for the taking if you're willing to actually spend some time to learn about it.
Thank you, Theo. That was a fantastic 10-minute overview. And we're going to come back to some of those concepts that you introduced. So thanks a lot. So next, we're going to move on to Kira. Kira's going to take us through some of her experiences of creating live performance projects within virtual worlds. So hi, Kira. Can we bring Kira onto the screen? That would be great. Cool. You're up.
Hello. Hello, everyone. So nice to be back. We were only just there a few years ago in 2019. So this has been a really wonderful moment for us, journey for us, having been in Venice and now continuing to build virtually. I'm the founder of Double Eye Studios, which we founded in 2009. We create interactive XR experiences and we design story worlds. But I thought I would take us deeply into the two productions that we've run at Venice Film Festival in social VR with live actors. So at the heart of all of our content at Double Eye, we like to say that we combine heart with XR, and we're working with the latest technologies from volumetric capture to AR. And there are things that are really important for us in everything that we design. So you'll see this as a thread throughout all of our live performance work or other interactive XR work that we create. And that is social connection. We don't want VR to be solitary. We always want to bring people together, make it accessible and collective. We believe in emotionally driven content. We really want our experiences to have a wide range of emotions and the kind of unique and unexpected. What can we do in the virtual world that we cannot do in the physical world? And our work, of course, has been shown at some really wonderful film festivals. Predominantly, we'll be talking about what we've done at the Venice Film Festival. And in the last 7 years, what's really been interesting for us has been fusing live performance with VR. So it's been so exciting to see how this is emerging more and more, as Theo was just talking about everything expanding in the metaverse. So this production that we did at Venice in 2019 was this production of Love Seat. And we were, you know, working initially with improvisation in a multiplayer world that we were building that moved on to work with High Fidelity. We were hired by them to work with Philip Rosedale's team. That got turned into a paper that we published at Yale University, at IEEE. And then we continued experimenting and started developing our own passion productions. And that is this image that you see here, which was two of our actors that performed in Venice live. This is Jen Harris, who initiated the role of Abby, and Jonathan David Martin, who played Bruce. And we performed in this hybrid format, which was simultaneous to both a physical audience in Venice and a virtual audience in High Fidelity. And I thought I would play a little trailer. We'll see how this goes. And if the video stutters in any way, I'll just narrate on through it.
I've never met anyone like you, perfect partner. You're like an electric blanket plugged into the sun.
I will transform into a colossus of organization to protect you, my shield of preparedness.
Let's fly.
No. Don't fly the perfect partner over a portal to another dimension. Are you nuts?
Walking where no bee ever has.
But he landed anyway.
The fresh chance to pair an ordinary someone with the perfect partner.
I see a face that's still ready to just jump into the unknown and witness nature's like chaotic wonders with exhilaration instead of fear.
Keeping a thing in maintenance. That is a daily, hourly battle against every force that exists.
If you saw your perfect partner sitting in that chair, what would you see?
That was a real joy for us to run in Venice. We also had an additional production that we ran side by side throughout the day, which was done with Bose AR, and participants could wander through our sound stage and they could interact with the space and with a series of chairs and begin to project what they envisioned their perfect partner as. So we were playing with some abstraction that we really enjoyed in this beautiful space on the Lazzaretto Vecchio. And after 2019, as we returned to the States and headed into this unforeseeable future in this lockdown, the memories of being in the Lazzaretto really resonated for us. There was this hospital, which is where Venice VR typically takes place, which was built in 1403. It was a time, of course, when theaters and forms of entertainment were shut down and the doctors wore masks. And this really touched us deeply, and we felt that we really have to embrace what we are doing and build our next production much faster than we intended. So we headed into creating our next production. And if I show you a little behind the scenes, this is Beth Cates, our lighting designer, who is working with our team virtually. So we started to ship headsets out to all of our actors and train new talent and really utilize the social VR worlds for collaboration since we couldn't come together physically in New York. So here is Beth, and she's talking to our engineers in here saying, if you move the lights over here, you'll get more shadows. And so it was really wonderful for us to begin to design and use social VR in terms of a way of collaboration and real-time design. And I think we're going to see more and more of that in the metaverse. We are already seeing groups collaborating in VR. Some artists that have followed us into social VR, like the Ferryman team that has their production of Welcome to Respite in this year's festival. We brought them into VR chat. And we're seeing more creators move into worlds like Altspace and Mozilla Hubs and Neos, like the Metamovie team did last year. They are using these incredible collaboration platforms to get together and design together around the world. We founded the Virtual Repertory Theater to deepen our actors' understanding of VR, to get to bring them together so they could play games together and experiment with us and go more deeply into theater, since Broadway has been completely shut down for so long and it's just beginning to get back on its feet. We started to take stage managers and technicians, people from traditional theater jobs, and bring them into VR and ship them headsets. We partnered with HP that has been sending equipment to our performers and to our stage managers and technicians so they could learn and train and perform safely from home. And we want to continue to do this. This is a really deep part of our mission at II. So I'll take you into this production that we created last year, Finding Pandora X, which is this mix of live theater, immersive theater, and escape room. It's a branching narrative in the genre of a quest. The audience is given a collective role. You see them here on the left side of this image. They play the role and members of the Greek chorus. They're all given an avatar. That's really important for us. We want them to identify with a role, and this is something that they get to keep. And collectively, they actually use their voice. We enable them to use their voice and express lines throughout the production. And they have to work together to solve puzzles, to collaborate, to help the actors, to engage in participatory storytelling. So those are, again, these really important principles for us. It comes with a lot of risk because we are giving so much freedom to our audience, but we are willing to take those risks and continue to figure out the narrative. So let me take you behind the scenes of Finding Pandora X.
So what do you say? Are you ready to do something?
It's going to be temperamental. Let's see here. I'm going to go back for a moment and try one more time.
So what do you say? Are you ready to do something?
To the end of the trailer. So that's a sneak peek behind Finding Pandora X. You got to see a little taste of all three of the worlds, the main stage and the other two worlds from the branching narrative. And this grew out of our collaboration with the wonderful experimental theater La Mama and Culture Hub, La Mama, that's been around since the 1960s in New York. And we worked with an audience collectively. We were again running a hybrid format, but this time digital and virtual, which is still a format that we love. And we asked the audience about their dreams and shadows, what superpower they would like most, and they asked to fly. So that is something that we built in that, into that production. We just think that it has been such a joy to be able to teach audiences to fly during the pandemic and give them a sense of freedom. It is so magical in VR. And it's really been important for us to be able to expand our storytelling and teach audiences new things, especially people that are putting a headset on for the very first time. So this has been really a joy for us. We find that our productions have been incredibly global, of course, from the reach that starts in Venice. But as we have opened our productions now to a ticketed audience and public, we are finding that our numbers are growing incredibly from Asia, coming in from Japan, China, South Korea, and Taiwan. So that's also been really beautiful, and to see so many people speaking different languages and where they have to work together and solve puzzles collaboratively and use their voices together, even if they don't speak the same language, we get to watch them interact with each other and help solve these puzzles. So I'll just leave you with a little bit of our final information. And that gives you an overview of what we have been doing in social VR and what we expect will continue to grow and has just given us so much joy. Thank you.
Thank you, Kira. It was amazing. Both productions, Michelle and I, saw maybe just about 3 months before the festival started, we saw early prototypes. And just to say that Kira and her team built these experiences within that time, very, very complex worlds, very complex performances, both with your first project, Love Seat. I remember we saw a very early prototype and you had to completely rework the idea, and it was amazing. You turned up in Venice with this hybrid performance, and then came the year after, I watched a very early prototype. I think it was in May. For Finding Pandora.
Yeah. Yes, we built these productions very fast, 6 weeks for Love Seat and 8 weeks for Finding Pandora.
Yeah, it's incredible. And it's something that Michelle and I have found, and hanging out with Rick, who we're going to see next, that some of these, the world builders, and I know Kira's putting on a live performance, and that's incredibly complex, are building a world a week. And some of the projects that we've got are incredibly complicated. You know, they're done within 5 or 6 weeks. So it's quite incredible what you can achieve. But thank you, Kira. We're going to come back to you in the discussion. And I'm going to move on now to Rick. So Rick, I met Rick last year in our virtual world. We've never met for real, and that's the case with many of the people I hang out with now in virtual worlds. So Rick is based in Johannesburg, and he's got a very long long career in as a creative technologist. Hi, Rick. And I've only had a Zoom call with Rick, with him and being his real, in real life person, I think maybe once. So this is, I always see Rick in Avatar. I meet him in virtual worlds. And he's got an incredible group of people he works with. But he has a long history in creating games. He has a very interesting VR business that he's going to talk to us about. And he's also going to talk to us about some of the creative and commercial possibilities in world building and social VR. So far away, Rick.
Thanks so much, Liz. Hi, everyone. Yeah, as mentioned, I'm coming from you from one of the metaverses, from VR Chat. It's also very strange to see me as a human avatar. As Theo mentioned earlier, I'm very much of the thought of avatars really need to be anything. So, you know, for metaverses to really exist, you really want to be anything you want. But I thought I'd arrive as a Ready Player Me avatar just to introduce people to the concept before we go too culturally crazy. So just a little bit of background. I've been developing games since Nokia phones. That's many decades ago. And through that process, obviously been learning a lot on networking, on how gaming communities interact with each other. And when virtual reality came along, it really was, for me, a huge shift in the technicality of creation. So where Eden kind of originated from is we were doing a lot of art shows. We were working with artists like William Kentridge, artists like Mary Sabande, putting on a lot of these public-facing immersive art shows. The shows obviously were phenomenal. And what we started noticing after a couple of years is the same sort of issues we would always find. Batteries would not charge correctly. People were a bit scared of how to use a virtual reality device at first because they have to strap in, especially at big events where people are all kind of dressed up. They don't really want to go and stick something on their face and kind of strap in. And in Africa, where we're based, there's a lot of big hairstyles where just it was physically impossible to get the straps on the head. And the problem with this is when you try to engage with people, they felt a little bit stupid. And you know, already that VR experience didn't start so great. So what we did basically from there is taking all our learning and what you see in the background here. This is one of our what we've been working on for the last 2 years. We've been developing a system to really make virtual reality easy. So as you can see on the screen, we have a touch screen and we have VR goggles that actually has a handle on it. So for events, for galleries, for any kind of situation where we might be faced with people that have never used the technology before, we've developed a very easy system where people walk up to the touchscreen, they just swipe, choose the experience they want, and that will then instruct the headset to play whatever content was chosen. And this is absolutely phenomenal as it really requires no hosts. I'm sure all of you that have run VR events before, hosts become so important because you have to awkwardly kind of touch someone's hand to show them how to press a button on the controller. And we've taken all those things. We've built a charging coil into the stand itself. So once someone's finished with the experience, by the nature of just hanging it down, it begins to charge the headset again. Then behind that, we also have an entire analytics platform and a content distribution platform, meaning that we can create content and push it to any snackers that exist all around the world in a very easy to use system. Creators can also create not only the content on the headset, but also poster images and selection and whether they want rating systems on the platform, all of this into a very easy solution. And while this was happening, the pandemic came about and things really shifted a lot in the public-facing VR spaces. Where it shifted in the opposite direction is we were working a lot with the Reach for a Dream Foundation, which is a foundation in South Africa that takes kids in hospitals on their wishes. So they would take these kids to go out to the aquarium. They would take them out for adventures in the mountains. And obviously with the pandemic, this was impossible now. So what we started doing with the hospitals is bringing these adventures back to the kids using VR. We created these dream kits. And in these dream kits, we reached out to the global VR community. And to those of you out there, thanks so much. A lot of content was sponsored to show these kids. So kids could play with puppies. Kids could go swim with dolphins. And what we saw there was just absolutely incredible from both the staff, from the kids themselves, and from the parents of the kids. It really felt like this is one of the use cases where VR can really, really change and help someone's life. So through that, also spending a lot of time in the metaverse, as Liz mentioned, you know, it's been, I think, a year and a half now, we've had our little metaverse crew where we get together once a week and explore these platforms and seeing things like the Venice Biennale happening, seeing things like Rain Dance happen in VR. It's absolutely astounding what's happening in these spaces. And as we started spending more and more times in these platforms and the curious nature of myself and the broader community, we started really realizing how the nature of content creation is changing. So as you see me now, as I'm engaging with you in a room, I'm in a virtual world where, just like the real world, I have a camera, I have my device here. I've got a TV running. I can really kind of take you through a journey and help kind of show the outside world what these platforms do. On top of that, how we create content. So how are you seeing me on Zoom now? In these platforms, I have this camera, so I can record like you would with a normal camera. Further than that, what we are doing at Eden, we are very excited about 360 content creation within the metaverse platforms. And anyone that spent time in these platforms will see how powerful this is. And it's one of the tricky things to explain to people what's actually going on. And this is why quite often I will attend the calls like this. It's a great way to show externally what's happening from these internal metaverse spaces. So we're very excited going forward as Eden. We are looking at creating a whole range of characters, a world specifically around kids and kids within children's hospitals and how we can help them navigate their current situation. But instead of going traditional routes, we're looking at platforms at the moment, VR chat, how we can create the whole character sets, bring in external actors. So like I am now, we can have each person in different spots, yet we can bring all the cast together in one room and then record that and shoot that in 360, which we'll then put on our Snacker device, which then makes it incredibly easy for kids and staff within the hospitals to actually enjoy and watch these 360 experiences. So that's just a little catch up and very much looking forward to the panel and discussing it further with you. I also do have the Metaverse Crew booth, which I've brought into our building here. So this is some of the projects from the crew that have been doing. Spirit of Place, Exploring Home, just a beautiful work by Ruth. I always get confused whether to call people by their real names now or their metaverse names. And then another crew, Bliss, in the Ear of the Storm, just fantastic VR chat showcases that you can see currently in Venice in the experience. So very much looking forward to chatting and open to questions. And I'll swap to my usual avatar now that you've kind of got a bit used to the human form. Looking forward to chatting.
Thank you, Rick. Yeah, please move. It's very weird seeing you in human form. I'm very disturbed. I'm personally very disturbed. And it would be great. Maybe you can bring some of the... Do you want to go into some of the... I mean, can you go into the stand, into that world that you did for VRCon? Because it's kind of beautiful. It'd be really nice if we could actually take people into your very beautifully designed metaverse. Because Rick's actually... Rick and the community, he mentioned the projects that we have in selection that come from out of his community. So those three projects are in competition. And also, I forgot to mention, while we're here talking about people, we have Deirdre, this is Vikira as well, Deirdre and Steve, who are from Welcome to Respite team, who Deirdre's voice was in, in the video that Kira showed of Finding Pandora X. So they're in the audience, Kira, rooting for you. So, Rick, feel free to... Do you want to show us... take us into that stand?
Yeah, sure.
Great. Can we zoom into Rick again? Is that okay? On speaker view. Great. He's just loading it up now. Fantastic.
All right, so here I am. So this is my kind of normal avatar, as mentioning earlier. Very, very far from humans. I've been a game developer, character designer, and I think the power, once you see your own characters being animated by humans in a space, it's just absolutely unbelievable. So for an example, this is a booth. There's a very small community conference happening in VR chat called VRCon. And what that is, it's a conference for community members. So you're limited to a very small kind of booth. So what we did is our crew kind of got together and we created a little metaverse newsstand. So how this actually works is the booth itself is kind of full of free beer, just to get quite glowy there, to get the customers in. But how this actually works is you'll see on the left, we've got videos that constantly play. And these are all videos that have been shot and built from performances within VR chat. and talking about avatars, the crew created this little avatar machine. So basically you can walk up, choose any one of the avatars here, and then dress it up and you can be any of the crew avatars you want. And just an example how traveling works in the metaverse. Here you can see, which is quite common, those who have been in VR chat before, this is what's called a portal. So you as an avatar, if I jump through that portal, I will go to another world. So here's just an example of some of the crew worlds. So Mycelia, which is one of the performances happening tonight, you can come up here, choose a Mycelia performance, and then very quickly jump through this portal and you'll end up in the Mycelia world. So it's just a very quick example of the type of environments you can create. This one's very lightweight because it's basically a world to help people get to all the various community worlds.
Cool. But I'm very happy for Rick as we go into the conversation now for you to take us to some places, because it's really fun to be able to see it come to life. So I want to, can we pull everyone back onto the main screen? Thank you, tech team. So thanks, those brilliant presentations, incredibly rich. So the bit I want to dive into now is, because I'm sure a lot of people in the audience will have questions around sustainability. Because, you know, these are, you know, it's incredible the work you've been doing, but let's talk a little bit about how, is there a place at the moment for revenue generation? And is there, and what's going to happen into the future? What do you predict? So I'm going to start actually with Theo, because you were mentioning some of those big events by those big brand entertainment, you know, the celebrities, especially, you know, on the music scene, what's mm-hmm. happened in Fortnite and other places. Have you got any other examples of projects that you know that you've kind of seen a model emerge that's kind of successful? And it could be a festival, it could be a single performance, something that hasn't hit the headline, you know, that hasn't been so big, sort of A-list.
Well, it's interesting because Burning Man has transitioned into a virtual environment because of the pandemic. And I've been speaking to a lot of smaller companies who are wanting to experiment with comedians and musicians, certainly for like virtual DJs, for example, who want to build a platform or an immersive experience where you have live capture of a comedian in another studio, but he's presenting in front of a virtual crowd. And some of the typical conversations I've had are, you know, what's the concurrency of the platform? How many people can I host on it? How can I sell tickets, for example, for this? And we've been exploring ideas like selling tickets as an NFT. So I buy an NFT as a ticket, and with it comes some kind of utility and benefit. So there might be a unique piece of artwork or a unique comedian sketch or a joke attached to it. It gives that ticket, you know, that NFT gives me access to the event. And there could be some other associated benefits with it as well. So there are people sort of playing around. It's not just all about the sort of A-list celebrities, you know, floating around in Fortnite and things like that. People are building smaller studios and smaller, more sort of intimate events where you can still capture a worldwide audience. You don't have to have, you know, millions of people running around, but you could have a couple of thousand people who will still enjoy the event, whether it's a musical experience, like I say, whether it's a film a premiere, for example, as well as another one, whether it's a comedy. I think anything. Like, I come from Edinburgh. I live in Edinburgh, and we've just finished our Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And anything that you could have in the Fringe Festival, you could potentially host in VR, in a metaverse context. So if so anything that has a physical venue beforehand, you could certainly recreate that experience and then open the doors, in a sense, to everyone who wanted to experience that. Physical events are obviously very tied to location, and then you become an exclusionary point there in terms of accessibility. VR allows you to basically open that experience up to everyone.
Yeah, it's a really cool idea about the NFTs, but I know there's going to be some people in the audience who probably want some explanation of what an NFT is. And I'm very sorry, I'm going to throw this onto you, Theo, because I always hate doing it.
Yes, I mean, the term is non-fungible token, and I think the easiest way to sort of bring it down to an audience level, in a sense, for people who've never heard of it before, it's a digital asset that you can buy. It's registered on the blockchain and it's uniquely yours. So it's your asset. The most common example is people have been selling digital artwork, and it could be one of 10,000 unique items in a collection, or it's a one-off piece of art. And in a sense, you are buying that piece of art and your ownership is registered on blockchain, so it's immutable. So you actually own that piece of art, and you can it's tied to you, your identity. And so that's in a metaverse context. When we talk about selling goods and services in a virtualized environment, you know, people have been selling goods and services in Second Life for years. So I could design a home, I could design furniture for it. But in a sense, what you could do is actually sell unique items that are only available to the owner. And they're one-off pieces. And because they're registered on blockchain, nobody else can copy them.
And it's interesting, we've gone straight into NFTs, and I love the idea of the live performance in the NFT collectible, because I hadn't kind of linked those two things before, because live performance is kind of, it's complex in on platforms like VRChat, because like you said, there's a limited amount of people you can fit into an instance. So maybe we should explain what an instance is, and also Kira, please go ahead and start talking about some of the ways you've been making it work and what you've experienced from, because you've still got a run of finding Pandora Racks, and you've experimented a lot beyond festivals with trying to do runs of theatre. So please give us some, some examples and what you found about selling tickets and getting people into events.
Surely, it's an ongoing exploration, I would say, right now, because I think the audience is very new, and that's something we really have to consider as creators and world builders, that we are essentially bringing some people in for the very first time into VR. So they haven't encountered a social VR world. They don't even know how to get a ticket or move their avatar or get jump through a portal, as Rick was showing us, right? These are things, this is language that they still have to learn. So our team has been, trying to hold their hand quite a bit through early onboarding, which we script with actors. You know, we make sure that we have live actors greeting them in the very early scenes of our show. So it's a part of our performance. It's not exactly where the story unfolds, pieces of the story unfold, but we're really helping them get comfortable, change into their avatar, navigate their menus, get comfortable with locomotion, and learn how to interact and speak with each other. So these are all these kinds of new, I think it's falling between UX design and narrative design, and how these pieces of storytelling and world building can continue to meet the audience and help bring them forward. Definitely setting our ticket and price point was a real challenge for us. There were other teams that had set tickets and price points, like our really wonderful colleagues on the Circuit Adventure Lab and the Tempest, and they were doing something that worked for them. Our team is quite big. We have 5 performers in our show at every given time. Our show is branching into other worlds, so we also have to have additional tech members tracking those things. We have a stage manager that's jumping between all of these different points. We have live lighting and sound cues that are getting triggered by a board operator. We have some things that the actors handle, but also we want to make sure that we're training up that new economy, as Theo was essentially talking about, these generations that will live and work in these virtual worlds. And so we want to start to give people those skill sets now and get them comfortable with running new jobs. And they need to be compensated. So we're trying to find ways to make that compensation work for them, and sell a ticket that we think an audience can afford, is something between what we might expect off Broadway, perhaps, but something that definitely also feels different than we might interact with if we were just downloading a game that we could play many times again. So we have to remind our audience and educate them that these are live performers, there's a live tech team, a lot of these things are happening with an investment of time and energy, and we want to make sure that people are getting compensated.
And how come you chose VRChat as a platform? I mean, it's interesting that Theo brought in the fact that it's really important to start thinking about cross-platform platforms where you can find different audiences. You know, and obviously some of the web browser stuff is going to be more accessible. Tell us a little bit about your choice.
Sure. We had been working with High Fidelity, doing this really wonderful work with their team, building out all of these systems with them for live queues that were really exciting things that we then rebuilt on VRChat. And we had explored VRChat prior to Venice in 2019. We knew that High Fidelity was going to be changing course. And so we were trying to look into a community that was still embracing social connection through virtual reality and embodiment and full body tracking. These are things that were really important to us. High Fidelity had enabled us to have custom avatars, and VRChat did the same. And we could really, you know, bring the types of avatars and express the artistry that we wanted for our stories. And that was something that was really important to us. There were other platforms that were also really interesting. We looked at platforms like Sansar and Neos, but something that was also really important was to be opening up to the audience that Oculus has been developing with the Quest untethered headsets. And we know that more of the headset designers will also open up to untethered possibilities. And we have to be thinking about what platforms are reaching them. And VRChat was a really great fit for us.
And are you exploring other platforms at the moment?
We are. Yeah. And I'll just keep that a little secret right now. But yes, I think that there are some really great platforms that are continuing to emerge, and we should just keep exploring. I think it's worth everyone that has a headset or a desktop that can run social VR to download all of the platforms and play around in them until you find what really fits your story. You know, there are stories that we want to develop that would be perfect in Altspace or perfect in Rec Room. So it really depends on the type of story and style and how you want to convey the way that you are interacting with your audience.
Yeah, and I think that's something that Michelle and I found, that in VRChat, because it's completely open for any, you know, it's not a Minecraft or a Rec Room where basically you're given world-building tools, which are, you know, there's amazing stuff going on there, but it's pretty limited. You can go crazy and you can choose any aesthetic and go. It's so diverse what you can create. And that's what, and especially when it comes to self-expression, which I think is something super important that I'm really glad you brought up at the beginning, Theo, because this is a whole new area of exploration where you can be embodied, you can choose your identity, and there's whole ranges of possibilities for design and for revenue generation around avatars. So I'm going to bring you in, Rick, because you are the avatar king here. And also, you know, Rick has been exploring a lot of the different platforms and also the NFT landscape. So it'd be great if you could talk a little bit around that, what you've discovered.
Sure. So I think it's, as I think we've heard a lot, the metaverse is, it's not one thing. I think anyone claiming to say they're building the metaverse platform is probably been doing too much marketing. But I think in reality, at this stage, every metaverse has things that do really well and things that they might not do very well. And for myself, my whole play is, it for me, and very much personally for me, the metaverse needs virtual reality because it brings intimacy. It brings the human to the technology. We used to run, before the pandemic, every single Friday, we would open up our lab to artists because it really was, VR brings the human touch to technology. So what happened in the past is, if you were a traditional artist and you wanted to get into 3D CAD design, the learning curve was just absolutely huge. You had to really understand, you know, things like Blender and Cinema 4D, Maya, a very kind of technical tool to use. And then with the creation of VR tools, things like Oculus Medium, things like Quill, once you get an artist inside there and they draw something in VR space, they very quickly realize how easy it actually is to make that jump from 2D all the way to CAD design. And it's not like, you know, you still need a computer, but the biggest difference there is you just need to know how to draw. Countless times during these Friday sessions, it would be the same case. Artists would come in and they would say, no, they don't use computers, or they don't, you know, and it was a fearful thing. And literally, you know, we'd always get them started with Tilt Brush, which was one of the early kind of creation tools. And always the same, within 2 minutes, the artist is now creating, walking under their sculpture, just the realism. And I think, you know, for me, when I'm exploring metaverses, I really look firstly at what is VR native supported as well. So having hung around in quite a few, I generally spend my time now between VR chat, a lot of my time in VR chat. As mentioned, their building tools are just ground up. So you're making your own cement to make your own bricks, to make your own buildings. Whereas the other metaverses, you know, if you only have purple bricks to build, you're only going to be able to build purple houses. And I think for creators, that is kind of the biggest thing. The one downside I can say with VR chat is how creators monetize. There is no crypto integration. Another metaverse where I'm very interested in is something called Somnium Space. That too is VR native. They also have easy access web and things like that, but they have, more importantly, an SDK for Unity that again lets you build from scratch what you want to do. And the nice thing about Somnium Space is your login is using your NFT wallet or your crypto wallet. So the moment I come in there, it can check, it can see what avatars I own. It has a marketplace, it has land ownership. So as an avatar creator, I can go and put an avatar that I've put on the blockchain on my piece of land, and anyone within that metaverse can literally walk up to the avatar and click on it. So I'd say my two personal favorites by far, I'd say Somnium Space and VR chat. But I'd definitely like to give a shout out to what's happening with Neos. Neos is one of these platforms that I think if even as a techie going in there and seeing their interface, it's quite extraordinary. It must be very difficult for people that aren't technical to get into that, but very, very early stage. But that platform for me is incredibly exciting because a lot of the world building happens in virtual reality. So me being in here, I actually go get my building tools and I can actually create and construct and program being in the metaverse itself. So those are my kind of top three, I would guess. But
brilliant.
VR chat still hands down the winner.
It's really interesting because I find they're two extremes, aren't they, really? There's VR chat that's all about community and there's no kind of economic model that's really hard to make work because, like you said, there's no revenue generating possibilities within it. And then there's Somnium Space, which is the ultimate kind of capitalist platform where everything's for sale. So it's funny, the first time I went in with Rick to Somnium Space, luckily I came at the right time because the guys who were the founders and their posse do this concert, is it every Wednesday night? And we had to have it, was it, we opened up a special portal that we could get to the venue. But our colleague is a producer, Mike, who's produced Venice VR, he missed them and he had to walk there. He had to walk several miles with his controllers to meet us.
He was exhausted when he got there.
Because there's no...
If you can afford it, you can then buy a car in Somnium Space, which you can race around and get you to places quicker.
So it's like as if there's absolutely no public transport system anywhere. So it was so funny. Yeah, it made me think about somewhere, you know, I was thinking sort of like you were stuck in the Midwest in the States, and you had there was no taxi, there was no public transport system. At that point, because it was quite early on. So yeah, they're the ultimate different communities. And I think in VR chat, though, they've just had a new injection of cash, haven't they? So I think the community is probably hoping for, you know, new models that are going to arise. So what kind of models do you think are going to arise on VR chat? Have you got any predictions, Rick?
Predictions? I would say it's my guess would be something similar to a Patreon kind of model or Roblox based on, you know, you might have a VR chat currency. It won't be tied to blockchain because just ground up, it hasn't been built like that. So they'll have to find other kind of solutions to that. But just to add quickly on the point you were before about, you know, platforms like Somnium Space, I think all of this is so incredibly new, right? And I think the creators of these platforms, they have an amazing vision, not to be like, I'm going to make all the money like this, but they might be like, you know, we want to have ownership of cars. And the nature of technology, especially emerging technology, is once you get to that point and you look over your shoulder, you might be like, uh-oh, there's, you know, what about the people that can't have cars? And I think this is also... It's incredibly exciting for these challenges to come up because it does really bring to the surface emotions from these different networks. And I think, again, this is why the being able to jump from metaverse to metaverse is so important, because as a musician, I might find one metaverse where I can perform. The ticketing system is just so much better in that I might go and do my performances there, but then I might want to come to VR chat to do a film, like filming myself within my world for promotions, but then might want to jump to Somnium Space to have an event to sell avatars to help fund the process. So I really think it's, because it's so new and so early, it's very much all these platforms should be working very closely together and trying to help how we can get across and in between them without feeling completely isolated. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And can you give us an idea? Because you've sold avatars, haven't you, before as NFTs?
Yeah.
And just can you talk a little bit about the avatar economics? Because there's non-NFT
sure.
platforms, and then there's, you know, there's ways you can sell any kind of digital asset, obviously, as an NFT.
Yeah, so I think there's two kind of, at the moment with avatars, I'd say there's two. And when I say avatars, I'm talking about this. When you hear NFT people talk about avatars, they might be talking about the profile picture on Twitter or something. Mm-hmm. But when I talk about when I'm talking about avatars now, I kind of see at the moment there's two kind of ways in which it's being done. The first way is kind of led by these guys called crypto avatars. And you would have all seen them in VR chat before. You probably have worn one of them before. It's like, sure, many of you have seen the giant orange. That was actually a tweak of one of the open source avatars by Tyson. But these are open source avatars. They're actually available for everyone. Anyone can use them. Anyone can download them. Anyone can reskin them. But the creators of that still sell the original NFT on the OpenSea marketplace. So even though the avatars exist everywhere, anyone can use them, it's completely free, they still sell the bragging rights, in a sense, to own that original avatar. Then secondly, what Somnium Space is doing is they very much like, your avatar is your skin and it cannot be duplicated, which really does make sense for people that are wanting to spend money on something like an avatar. You don't want to see someone else wearing, and everyone that's been in VR chat knows how powerful it is, right? Once you find an avatar that you like, it's terrible when you bump into someone and they're wearing the same, right? It's just... So what Somnium Space does is they lock it down from the beginning as an NFT. They mint it through their platform. Minting means create the avatar into an NFT. And they have these systems in place where there can only be one avatar of that nature, unless the creator's specifically chosen to say there are 5 editions. And that's all backed by the blockchain, that if someone does come with a very similar avatar, there's processes in which that can be discussed. So those are kind of the two types of avatar sales at the moment. It's more that open source version and then that more one of a kind version. But I'm sure in the NFT space, if any of you are aware of people like Artifact Studios, they're about to drop the Akira avatar project, and it's most likely mainly the Twitter post profile pictures, but we're very quickly seeing these NFTs being turned into full-on avatars. Like the ape community, they are currently being turned. I think every single person that owns an ape is now going to have a 3D character of their ape that they can use in various metaverses as well.
So what can, for example, that avatar you're wearing, is that the NFT that you sold?
No. So this is kind of this is a free avatar. It's, you can come and grab it. Or I think the gray version of it is here for free. So this is just, I often create when I'm learning for work what I need to do. It's very quick for me to create in my own style and then kind of take my learnings and work back. So this avatar exists both in Somnium Space and in VRChat. And exactly like we were discussing before, because I like to preserve that identity across, you know. I'm terrified to go into something like Facebook Horizon and have to be a human with no legs. It's just, you know, it's not me, and it will make me feel like I'm constantly not being me. So this is a VR chat avatar, but again, it's made in Unity. So anything that supports a Unity SDK, I've got the raw file, so I can obviously just change the SDK and publish it across multiple places. The avatar that was bought in Somnium Space, there is no way anyone can get access to that unless they now go and buy it from the person that now owns it. So I used to have those avatars in my own wallet, but once they were purchased, I no longer have those avatars at all. It's out of my control. They now belong and own. And it's the craziest feeling seeing someone that's purchased an avatar running around with it. It's very strange.
And so, Rick, can you share sort of like the value? I know it's hard because it's in is it an Ethereum that you've sold it? So can you give a kind of idea?
I think, I mean, there's a huge scale of things, but I would say on Somnium you're looking around probably an ether, one ether for avatars, because they're quite locked off. Whereas on OpenSea you might find VR chat avatars and things starting at some, you know, probably 0.2, 0.1.
And what's so we're talking a couple of $1,000s more than that?
Yeah. And you see, I mean, people. Yeah. To the point we were discussing earlier about, you know, the generational and trying to train people how to use NFTs, we mustn't forget there's this entire generation that are already NFT natives. And these are little, like young people that have millions of dollars sitting in their NFT bank accounts where they don't want to take it back to fiat, meaning like real currency. So I think there's this whole kind of market of people out there that are yet to be tapped into, that come from the crypto space, that are yet to really see what we say is the metaverse, you know, this creative, this show, this animated style. So I'm really looking forward to the emergence of those two worlds, because I do think there's already a big market out there of NFT and crypto users.
Great. And I know that, you know, Michelle and I have, you know, we're always thinking about what we're going to wear during Venice. And I got the most incredible, as you saw in the video at the beginning, a new avatar that was designed by some of the members of the Metaverse crew, Tyson and Face and Deke, and I've forgotten the name of the designer, but it's absolutely gorgeous. And I commissioned that as an avatar. So there's loads of work for artists to collaborate in this whole area, and it's something we're very excited about. But I know we've got a short amount of time left. Have we got a mic here, actually, if there's anyone would like to ask any questions at all to our panelists? We've got a question at the back from Gorky. Do you want to wait for the mic? And can the speakers hear from the mic? Or do you need me to repeat?
Hello.
We can hear, yes.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Here.
Cool. Hello, thank you. My name is Gorkina. I wonder the age of the people in those worlds, and if it is kind of important for you guys when you share how old you are and stuff.
Okay. Who wants to... Theo, do you want to broach that first?
Ages. To be honest, I mean, the beauty of a metaverse is that it's open to all generations. I mean, I know I talked about, you know, this Generation M, which is the generation that's going to be born into what we build today. But there's people exploring NFTs. I mean, I saw a tweet recently from a founder of a luxury NFT platform called Exclusible, where he was sharing a picture of his grandfather, who is 90, asking him about NFTs and what does this mean and how can he get into all of this. So I think if there's any kind of digital interest from whatever age you're at and you want to explore, then there's a community out there to ask. And the really good thing is that the community wants to give, you know, they want to give you those answers as well. I don't think there's any community that I've come across in the metaverse and the NFT space and the social VR space that is exclusionary and have said, oh no, this is ours, you can't come in and play. I think, you know, everyone recognizes the value of human expression and human connection, especially after a pandemic where we've all been locked down. And I think everybody has been in that position where it's like, I want to get out and I want to know how to explore and connect with people on a completely different level because the world is changing. And so it's all generations. I mean, I am 49, I'm going 50 next year, you know, and I've been through so many different sort of technological transitions. And I'm really excited about where this is going to go because I see myself in the next 10 years, 20 years, you know, being a part of this immersive experience as well. And the same with my kids.
Yeah,
you're going to have great retirement homes.
Exactly. I'm going to build the biggest one. I'm going to have a retirement island.
Well, I'll come visit, Theo. our audiences are definitely spanning from 20s up through 70s. I mean, what's been so beautiful is to see people that are purchasing a headset to attend a film festival and come across our show, or they purchase a headset to see our show, and then they fall in love with VR. It's their first time ever. And they just see the magical potentials. And these are people that are upwards of their 50s.
And Rick, what's your experience?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say, you know, for something like Somnium Space, definitely an older crowd. VR chat has been around for an incredibly long time, and it is absolutely massive in terms of install base. So VR chat has from, you know, tiny kids all the way through to any age group. And I think maybe the misconception a lot of people have with VR chat is VR chat has what's called public world. So anyone can jump into a world, and then you have private world. So I'm in a private world right now that only friends of mine can come in. And I think what happens a lot of the time is people will try VR chat for the first time and they land up straight in a public world. And unfortunately it can be quite crazy. You will have these kids running around and screaming, and you might think like, wow, this is a kid's thing, this is not for me. But what I always say is once you spend enough time and if you find just one person that's involved in a community that is relevant to you, you will probably never visit a public world again and never meet kids again, because what ends up happening is your crew, your community end up hanging out together with other like-minded people and worlds you go to. You know, we'll probably hang out at nightclubs that are kind of made towards a certain age group, whereas the kids might go and hang out at these games that they like to play. So only initially in these public worlds do you actually have that crossover, whereas I can say for myself, it's very, very seldom I actually go into a public world unless it's to save a new VR chat user, you know, to get them into what we say is the real VR chat. So an absolute huge scope of people.
Yeah, and it's an interesting, because it's so new at the moment in terms of, you know, the recommended age group. I mean, Michelle and I, you know, we have to think a lot about the kind of content that we're able to publish onto different platforms, and a lot of them are PG-13, so they're completely restrictive on certain types of content. But we know there's all sorts of stuff going on in VR chat. There's every community you can possibly think of, which is kind of really exciting when it comes to connecting, about gender identity, about all the ways of self-expression. So it's all sorts, but it is theoretically PG-13, so there's certain content can't be shown on the platform. We've got another question over there.
Hi, I'm Jacopo from UFO Interactive. My question is about marketing in those virtual spaces and metaverse. Right now we have cosmetics, events, but my question is, looking forward, there will be live storytelling experience inside those platforms, or brands will be looking to build their own metaverse to promote themselves and build their experiences? What is the road that you think we will go through in the future?
Are you talking about, is that a marketing question?
Yes, marketing.
Okay. I'm going to hand over to Theo for that.
Sure. So there's a number of avenues here. One of the most simplest forms is marrying things like augmented reality with the experience, first of all, to give them a taste of what it's going to be like when you apply a filter into the real world. So luxury brands, cosmetics, that kind of thing. There's brands already playing with that. When you get into the virtual environment, you've got to remember now you've got this volumetric space. So it's no longer a 2D plane. You're in a 3D world. So essentially, you can actually build, you could build on the simplest form, you know, a banner advert, which is dynamic and it shows content, but you don't actually have to have it there in front of you. You could actually have it up in the sky, or you could have it as part of the floor. You know, you're not bound by a traditional sort of out of office or out of home or any of the other sort of advertising platforms. You could take an advert into a video game, for example. That's a hugely unexplored landscape already right now. And then you're talking about building actual experiences where I can walk into either a showroom, or you've purposely built something spectacular like Louis Vuitton. Louis Vuitton, for their 200th year anniversary, built a whole virtual world where you could actually play as an avatar, explore this world, and unlock NFTs. And that, to me, is like really a really exciting expression for brands to look into. You know, if you could think about creating a world in VR chat, an open one where you have spent a lot of time designing the experience, and then open the doors and say, you know, welcome to Gucci world, or welcome to Prada world, or whatever. And everybody's experiencing the brand in a new and exciting way. You're showing off digital goods, you're engaging them with NFTs, you're showing videos, you're being part of a whole show, for example, a catwalk show, but instead of being seated down, you could actually walk down the catwalk yourself because you've actually bought an NFT of a dress and you actually want to show it off. Honestly, the world, you know, it's virtually unlimited potential for brands. And I think it's up to them to dream the experience that they want to portray.
Yeah, and very frighteningly, Gucci actually did, they did do a show, didn't they, in Roblox, which is very much a kid's platform. So every parent's worst nightmare.
And I'd like to just add on to that question. So in Japan, as an example, they once a year, there's a market called VKET, virtual market, where it's an absolutely huge, huge production. And that's like this, people in avatars, they're shopping for different items, mostly avatars, but world items as well. And when you go and you have a look at the sponsors wall in the Japan worlds, it is absolutely astounding what's happening there. It's the biggest brands you can imagine. Disney was there. Disney had their own shop. And I think very much it's almost a cultural shift that needs to happen in other parts of the world. I think, you know, like that's why initially for me starting as a human, it might be a little bit safer for someone to recognize me as a human. But if you go to something like VKET, if someone was a human in that world, like a real looking human like I was before, the avatars there might give you an odd look and be like, whoa, you're trying to be human. So I think it's very much a cultural shift that needs to happen. But I definitely see both. I think we're going to see many brands, which you're seeing already in like Sandbox and Decentraland and these platforms where brands are buying up land to host things. But I also think we're going to start seeing, like we see everyone has a website, brands will start having their own metaverses where you can go hang out, try on new outfits, try on new shoes. So very much both.
Thank you. I think I'm going to have to wrap up the panel. We could go on for hours. We've only done a little touch into this huge, huge area. But it's amazing having the three of you here sharing your experience. It's so rich and such an exciting area. I just want to do a shout out for another event that we're doing, and I touched on to this earlier. Michelle's going to be moderating a panel on Wednesday at 2 p.m. in this space that's about independent access to digital platforms and this issue of moral restrictions, which we've really faced with our programme this year. So he's going to be speaking with Louis Cacciatello, who also is from Vroom, who designed our Venice VR Expanded World, Lynn Seegers, and also the director of one of the projects that we that was very difficult for us to show in Venice, called In the Mist, which comes from Taiwan, which we were not able to publish on Viveport or Oculus due to the fact of the restrictions on age and the kind of content that they're allowed to show. So that's on Wednesday at 2. Then this evening, we, as you mentioned before, Rick, we have a most amazing performance in VR chat. It's called Mycelia, and it's a world, it's a beautiful cave-like world with fungi and crystals, and it's an extraordinary performance by a Canadian artist called Nanotopia, who plays music with biosonification and mycelia, or fungi. And it's quite astounding. The Metaverse crew were involved in designing the world and the avatars. So one of my favourite experiences I've had this year in VR chat, so please join us. I'm going to zip off in a second because I have to put my headset on and get into the Metaverse to moderate our Meet the Creator session at 5 p.m. So if you've got a headset, please join us. We do this every day at 5 p.m. So it's all of the 37 directors who've been teams who've been selected in competition. We have 3 to 4 every evening here, and we, Michelle and I, alternate and we do a Q&A. It's super fun meeting up with them. Or we have events every day happening. So do look at our program. It's on the Venice VR Expanded 2021 part of the Biennale website, and there's a whole events program there. So thank you so much to the panelists. It was a really, really fun discussion. Thanks for taking the time. Thanks to our, hello to our online audience. I forgot really to mention them. And thanks everyone in the room for listening. So big round of applause for the panelists.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.